roots me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Time to step back in history now and uncover some of those hidden gems in Manitoba. And who better than to walk us through it than Gordon Goldsborough? He joins me now from the Manitoba Historical Society. Good morning.
Good morning, Nadja.
So remind us of the clue that you left us with last week.
Well, I said that today we would be talking about a river that was once the major shipping route for supplies that were sent off to northern Manitoba. But because of a change that happened in the spring of 1893, the river's been abandoned ever since. The river we're going to talk about is the Red River. And I bet you there's a lot of people, when they hear that, are going to go, well, no, that's so silly, because I know the Red River is still being used.
Right. It's,
well,
abandoned. Not so much at all. An abandoned
Well,
place.
Actually, part of it is abandoned.
Okay.
And there's the story. But let's go back a little ways. So if we think back to the early fur trade days here in the part of Canada that, you know, would become Manitoba, we had the fur trade that would involve people coming from Europe, would land at the coast of Hudson Bay at the mouth of the Hayes River or the mouth of the Nelson River. They would establish trading posts there. And originally, people would come there to trade their furs. But then later, they would go inland. They would take boats. They would have canoes. Or if they needed a larger vessel, they would use these York boats and they would transport their trade goods inland. Well, both those vessels, a canoe or a York boat, they're what we would call a shallow draft vessel, meaning they can operate in pretty shallow water. That was the way it went for literally a few hundred years, that these small vessels came from the northern part of Manitoba and came south to provision these various fur trade posts.
Okay.
Well, things started to change in the 1860s, because then you started to get steamboats coming up from the United States into the southern part of Manitoba in the 1860s. And then in the 1870s and 1880s, you started getting railways coming in. Well, the net result of all that was it was vastly easier to bring supplies in from the south. So the whole direction of trade changed. So for centuries, it had been from the north coming south. But now, because of the railways especially, it was now easier and far faster to take them from the south to the north. So what you ended up with was boats that were basically large vessels running on the Red River that would go up the river out into Lake Winnipeg, and then they would steam around Lake Winnipeg to provision these various communities around the lake. Well, there's our story then. You need to have a river that is navigable by these larger boats. And these are boats that are not nearly as shallow draft as the canoes and the York boats that they were replacing.
Mm-hmm.
So in the early 1880s, a lot of the local politicians here in Manitoba started to petition the federal government that they needed to do something. Because if you think for a minute, the Red River, if you look closely at it, you know that it's really a prairie river. It's always sort of a muddy, brownish red color. Mm-hmm. And that's because, of course, of the area it drains. I mean, it drains this large prairie, you know, and there's erosion in the watershed, brings all this sort of sediment. So if you look at the river today, it's always kind of muddy looking, right? Well, of course, this sediment goes down the river, and what they would often find is that, you know, certain times of the year or certain years, the river would get very shallow, and this caused a problem for these increasing volume of boats. So the federal government in 1882 allocated some money to deal with this problem of the shallowing of the Red River. They allocated $60,000, and the idea was they were going to build a dredge.
Okay.
So they commissioned a company in Lockport, not Lockport, Manitoba, but actually Lockport, New York in the United States. They commissioned what was called a dipper dredge. And basically the idea was it was a great big scoop, and it would reach down into the water and grab a big chunk of mud and pull it out of the water and then drop it into this sort of big open barge or scow. And so the idea was that they built this dredge. They had a tugboat. They had some scows. They put them on a train and they brought them to Winnipeg. And in the spring of 1884, they put all these pieces, because they had to transport them in pieces, on the bank of the river, put them all together, and away they went down the river to start dredging the river. Well, what they found over the next, say, 40 years or so is that the single most common place that you had to dredge was at the mouth of the Red River. That's where all this mud from all the river, you know, from here in Manitoba, from North Dakota, South Dakota, all this mud that was coming up the river would basically start plugging up the mouth of the river.
Right.
So over half of all the sediment dredging that they did in Manitoba was there, right at the mouth of the river. Another place that was less well-dredged was around Selkirk. That's where they had the port for these for the dredge. They had a little bit around Winnipeg. But interestingly enough, almost none of the dredging took place south of Winnipeg, you know, on the part of the Red River that goes down to the United States. Mm. Almost no dredging was ever done there. Almost nothing was done on the Assiniboine River. And say the main reason was because from Winnipeg north, that stretch of the river was critical to transportation.
Right.
If anyone's listening who has been on the river, you probably are familiar with a place called the Forks. Not the Forks here in Winnipeg,
okay,
mind
you.
Okay,
that was where my head went first.
No, it's actually a spot north of Selkirk where the river actually splits into three. So rather than having a river that goes right out into Lake Winnipeg, it actually splits in three, and we have a west channel that kind of goes sort of zigzagging back and forth, going out in a northwesterly direction out to Lake Winnipeg. There's a center channel, and then there's an eastern channel that goes both out. They go sort of in a northeasterly direction. Well, for the first, a few decades, the main channel, the one that was used for the vast majority of these ships, was the western channel. And so that was the most important one. That's the one they would do all the dredging on. Well, this is where we get into our abandonment story, because in the spring of 1893, after a particularly harsh winter, they went out and they found that, lo and behold, the West Channel was plugged solid.
Uh-oh.
It was right full.
Yeah.
And so the engineers looked at it and they, well, you know, we would end up spending probably most of the summer trying to dig this channel out. And of course, all those ships are going to be really upset because they can't get out into the lake.
Mm-hmm.
They looked around and, well, what are we going to do? Well, it looked like the eastern channel wasn't quite as full of sediment. So they said, let's just for the time being, we'll dig that one. And that's the one that we'll use, you know, in the meantime. Well, what it turned out was that they never went back to that western channel. So it had been the single most important channel all along. And now they abandoned it, went to the eastern channel. So from 1884 to about 1903, the west channel was the main one. But then from 1903 on for a few years, the east channel became common. But then it's too started to sediment up. So We have one left. And, you know, it was the one that the vast majority of the traffic then for the next, well, most of the 20th century was in that center channel of the Red River. Well, over time, the volume of shipping reduced. You know, we had during the 70s and 80s, I remember people will remember the cruise ships that operated on the Red River. A lot of that sort of started to wane as we get into the early 21st century in the 2000s. Well, 1999, the federal government is looking at its various expenditures and it says, you know, we're spending anywhere between $1 and $2 million dredging the Red River. And, you know, the volume of ships that are going up and down that river just isn't really all that much. You know, can we really justify spending all this money? So in 1999, they made the decision they were going to stop dredging. So, of course, that's what they did. And the result was that the sediment that had always been there coming up the river from the south continued to start building up. But because now they weren't dredging, it kept building up and building up. Well, in fact, just a few years ago, one of my colleagues went up the old West Channel, and he said in places, it's only a few inches deep.
Really?
Inches. And,
wow.
You know, at one time it used to carry these great big vessels.
Yeah.
So you can just give you an indication of just how thoroughly that West Channel has been plugged.
Mm-hmm.
But even the center channel now is starting to plug up. The mouth of it is starting to sediment. And the result of that is that it's creating sort of a natural dam. The water that used to flow out into Lake Winnipeg now gets kind of held back by the mouth of the river. So what we're finding is that there is a channel that leads into the marsh. There is a great big marsh at the mouth of the Red River called the Netley-Lebo Marsh. And previously it was full of vegetation. Well, what's been happening now over the last few decades is that an increasing volume of the river is actually not going through its river channel anymore, the center channel. Instead, it's going through the marsh.
Okay.
And it's causing dramatic changes in the marsh. The vegetation has been disappearing. The marsh has been getting deeper because it's being scoured by all this stuff going through it. And so we're really quite worried about the health of this big marsh because of the lack of dredging. So there's the scenario. You've got a river channel that was once a major shipping channel that was filled with sediment. You've got the main channel that was used for decades, but now in the absence of dredging, it too is starting to fill up. So there's actually a group actually right now that is hoping the government may see fit to resume dredging at the mouth of the river. And the reason is that although there's not as much shipping going on in the lake anymore, there is one very important ship that still goes up and down the river or would like to. People may know that, of course, there is a vessel called the Nemeo, which is a research ship. It goes around Lake Winnipeg collecting samples of the lake to see what condition it's in. It's been sitting at Gimli for a number of years, but in order for it to be certified as seaworthy, it's got to come to a dry dock in Selkirk. It can't get there.
Right.
It can't get to Selkirk because the river is now so sedimented up that it can't get through. It's just too shallow. So the hope is that we can dredge the river.
Resurrect the dredging.
Resurrect the dredging, allow more water to go out into the lake directly so that it would allow the Nemeo to get up to Selkirk. But it would also then help us to save this Netley-Lebo Marsh. So it's kind of a, we think it's sort of a win-win situation all around.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that. What have you got for us next time?
Well, my wife frequently describes herself as a history widow.
Why would she say something like that?
Well, I suppose it's because of sort of the vast amount of time that I spend obsessing over Manitoba's history. And so next week, I'm going to tell our listeners about a story about how this situation came about. In fact, my wife discovered an abandoned object buried in our backyard, and she says that if she had known then what she knows now, she would have taken it, and rather than give it to me, she would have tossed it out in the woods.
And then she would have husband again.
She might have.
Well, we as Manitoba owe her a huge thank you, because without that discovery, we might not have you in our studio every week.
I'll tell that story next week.
Thanks, Gordon.
You're welcome, Nadja.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba. Many moons ago.